Hello, this is Black Country Blokes chewing the fat.
Listen.
I've been hearing a lot lately about men don't talk, but in my experience, men do talk, just people aren't listening. So it's going to be me and a group of blokes discussing our struggles and victories through life. Warning, there may be some bad language, so apologies to all the moms, especially my own. Let's get going.
Listen.
I've been here. This is the Black Country Blokes chewing the fat about everything that is mental health, disability, and life in general. Here with me, Kev Dillon, and my partner, as always, Lee Cadman. And we're joined today, Sarah from the Black Country Women's Aid. Sarah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you may recognise Sarah. I think she's been on the podcast and on our radio show, which we're starting back this Thursday. And we're joined by Emily Barney from Spartan Brain Gym. So check us out on Black Country Extra this Thursday. But we're going to go into everything that Black Country Women Aid does, the fundraising they are doing, and everything that's around it. It's remarkable. They've also got a sister company, Asmark.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't it? Asmark. They've also been on it. But we'll be talking about all that and more. But before we start, we're going to talk about our gratitude list. I'm grateful. I'm not saying that. And I said this last week. I was on the men last week. I was feeling well this week and just having time. Me and my wife went out for just a date night, and often, you know, we go out. Well, it's very rare that we go out. Very rare. So it was nice just to be me and my wife, have a meal, and we bumped into a few nice people, and it's nice being with the people you love, telling them that you love them, and having quality time. So I'm very grateful for, A, being able to do it and having someone to do it with. What are you grateful for?
Oh, work colleagues, I think, this week. Mm. Deb in the shop's been helping us out loads, and personally and at work, and yeah, it's just great to have some backup and support and someone helping push the business along. As yeah, it's been good.
What are you grateful for, sir?
So I went to Shropshire for the weekend, and when my kids were growing up, I read loads and loads of storybooks to them, and they're beautiful illustrations in the books. And I met one of the artists who was the illustrator of some of the books that I used to read to my kids. So when she showed me her art, I sort of said, oh, my God, this is just incredible. Mm. And I think there must be just loads and loads of talented artists out there that could, you know, you don't have to be in a book to be a good artist. And so since then, I've been sort of encouraging everybody to just put pen to paper, paint on a brush, to express themselves in art. And she was a complete and utter inspiration. But I read those books to my kids, so I'm grateful to have met her. Her name is Jenny Jones.
Who did the boy, the mole, the fox and the horse?
Charlie. I can't remember his second name. Charlie something.
I love that movie. I bought it for my wife, Kate.
And me, you bought it
for me. And I bought it for you, the book. The illustrations lovely, but obviously I can't read and write. So then when they made it into the movie, have you ever seen it?
No, I don't think I
have. Oh, you've got to wait. It's on the BBC iPlayer. I'm always sharing, but it'll make you cry. The book's beautiful, but the movie's the most 20 minutes, it's perfect. The illustrations are almost like Winnie the Pooh drawings, but the voice, the music, the positive mental health thinking is phenomenal. You've got to go and watch that, Sam. Send me a message.
I will do.
Thank you. It's on, honestly, but when you're saying about the art, whenever I see anything on Instagram or anything, I see the art. It's so simple. It's like it's made for a child, but with adults. Anyone can watch it, with your child or your nan. And the message is, every time you watch it, you choke up at a different part. You're thinking, how beautiful. Because
yeah.
Like, they've got the innocence of the boy, the beauty of the mole. It's a naughty old fox and a wise horse. But every time you watch it, you think, that's me.
There's a good message in there, isn't there, in all of it?
Yeah, every one of the characters you can relate to at a different point of your journey.
Well, I was just encouraged by, she was incredibly talented. So look up Jenny Jones. And she lives in Bishop's Castle. And that was, I stayed in an Airbnb in her place. But this whole thing about encouraging people to do things, and when we get lots of women who say, I'm not very good at art, everybody can do art, everybody can, and that's what she was saying. She says, I run art classes, but you know, when people walk into her art class, it's like, I can't do. We walk in with a can't do rather than what can I do. So you know, we're doing lots of things around artwork with people who come into our services just to give it a go, and I just think there's some incredible talent out there. You know, I just think everybody should give it a go.
But I do a lot of crafts with my daughter, and that was what we did a lot through lockdown. And as you say, whether you're playing with Play-Doh or whether you're painting, and she has her paints, but I've got the paint pens, and it's just blodging it or putting it on your fingers. And it's sometimes like it's just putting paint or crayon or whatever on the paper, make it splodgy. It's different.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I enjoy doing that with chalk on your patio as well, because you make a mess and then the rain washes away.
Yeah, we did. We called it. So we didn't know what we were going to call it to begin with, but we spent maybe about 6 or 8 weeks working with anybody who wanted to give us a 12-inch square of any thoughts that they had to for a message to victim of violence and abuse. So we ended up with this massive quilt. I mean, it's bigger than a king-size quilt. Mm. And it was finished around March time, and it toured the whole of Sandwell, and we called it the Quilt of Hope, because in there were squares of messages that, and we had the handprints with paint, we got somebody who did some tapestry, we got somebody who cut something out of a magazine, we got somebody who drew something with some felt pens that you could put on material, and we sewed them all together. It's absolutely gorgeous, the messages, that sort of, you know, message of hope. I just think art's unbelievable, and it's something we don't do enough of.
Well, a lady I met from a lady's classes, her name's Sarah, and she studies war and conflicts, and she goes around the world, so, you know, war. And I went, everywhere that there's war, there's beautiful art.
Yeah.
Whether it's photos, paintings, and we communicate through, and as you say, hope. And sometimes, like, even like in trauma, these horrible things have happened to these people, and they paint a better tomorrow.
Yeah.
A world that we still want to live in. What's that story? I hope I get it right. And there's that woman in refuge, and she'd been there for years, and she said, I'm going to plant a peach seed. She said, are you going to stay here till the tree grows? She went, worst case scenario, I'll stay here until the tree grows and I'll have shade. And if I'm not, someone else will have somewhere beautiful to stay.
Oh, wow.
Well. How beautiful that is. You know, I plant the seed, so if I'm not here to see it, at least someone will enjoy the beauty.
Yeah.
That's what art does, whether it's poetry, photography, dance, song. It's beauty that we can put into a world that has so much darkness, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's there's colour to be brought out in the world, I think, and certainly a lot of the people that we support, there's darkness in their life. So, you know, one of the things we're trying to do is to sort of, you know, bring out their expression. Of course, it's important to talk about it, absolutely, but there's just lots of different ways to express themselves and to sort of send out messages to other people. And we're working with an art therapist at the moment with some of our groups, and it's early days. And they'll say, oh, we're no Michelangelo. And you think, you don't have to be. You just have to be you. You have to express yourself. And actually, I think in some of the art, you can actually see the sort of pain or trauma or anger or inspiration. Or, you know, you can just see that in how people are translating what's in their head, you know, through their body onto the paper. It's incredible.
It'd be interesting to see that as they get treatment as well.
Yeah.
If they're in it, presuming, and see the art changes. Yeah.
And more confident, you know, because that whole first, I don't know, paint on the paper, it's all, this is rubbish, and everybody says that, and you think, why'd you say that? And just over time, it's like the confidence to do it. Confidence to, I'm going to do this more, I'm going to do this outside of this session, I'm going to go to the works and get art materials and express myself. That whole journey of sort of, you know, expressing yourself, it's just a different way, isn't it?
Well, Leonardo da Vinci, he died with the Mona Lisa being incomplete. He carried out for 30 years, never thinking it was good enough. And that's one of the most famous paintings in the world. So even Leonardo da Vinci didn't think he was Leonardo da Vinci.
Not good enough.
And that's the beauty of art. You know, it's, as you say, and you know, you go to some art museums, and there's a splodge. And people pay £1 million for his splodge. And you're thinking, well, why is his splodge better than my splodge?
Yeah.
It's in the beauty of it. And sometimes, I remember I did a volunteer work. What do you do when you're at school?
Work experience.
And I worked for the hearing newspaper, and someone had interviewed a blind artist, and he did a self-portrait. They'd never seen himself, but he painted what he thought he looked like.
Oh, wow.
So if you saw that painting just there, you think, oh, what's that? But the backstory of the beauty of it makes the painting any more beautiful, doesn't it?
Beautiful. That's fabulous, that is. So we're hoping to have an exhibition at some point. That's what I keep telling all the artists that come into Black Country Museum. So maybe soon, watch the space, an art exhibition.
So tell us, because you said, is it 40 years the Black Country Women's Aid has been going?
So we will be 40 years in 2026, yeah. And humble beginnings with a community worker and a social worker who were going into lots of families and they were seeing domestic abuse. And you can imagine 40 years ago, it's... what would that be? That's like the 80s, isn't it? So that's like the 80s is like my youth. yes, my age. But then they were going into lots of people's homes where there was domestic abuse and sort of thought, you know, something needed to be done. And so they badgered the council and said, have you got anywhere? Because people need somewhere to go if they need to escape. It's just the 80s, you know. I say that. And so it just started as a sort of, you know, in a house that was due for demolition around a kitchen table and people make it happen. And so from then on, one of our wonderful, wonderful main refuges was purpose built for us. It was designed with children and women that lived there to sort of what would make this space better for you. We had some architects that ended up, I think, winning some sort of architectural prize for the design of the refuge. And we got loads. I mean, I've done this job for 25 years now. And in the when I first started, I was really interested because loads of people wanted to come and see this purpose-built refuge. So we're very lucky in the Black Country, certainly in Sandwell, that it's a really fabulous refuge space. So, you know, from humble beginnings to the sadness of always needing to be there. Every year we sort of say, it's a real shame we're here, it's terrible. I'm glad we are, because as long as abuse is happening, it's not right that people hold it in themselves. It's important that they don't take responsibility, that the burden of that rape or that domestic abuse on themselves, and that they tell somebody, because you want people to stand proud and confident and, you know, not their lives affected. And what we always say is we can't stop what has happened. We can help you with what your future, you know, what happens in the future. And you know, we know it affects, you know, abuse affects people that, you know, they don't want to go out, they difficult to meet people, you know, it destroys their life. So 40 years, I'm proud.
And abuse has got so many different faces, hasn't it? Like, there's like, whenever you think of abuse, it's always sexual abuse. You always think of physical abuse, but it's got many different faces, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There's a term, coercive control, and the professor that coined that phrase has recently died. Actually, died in March. So coercive control, that silent drip drip of, you know, putting somebody down, you know, it's a look of, you know, you wait until you know what you're going to get when you get home, that sort of knowing those trigger points that somebody's getting annoyed with you. You don't even have to lay a finger on somebody for coercive control. It's just that sort of silent control that's and if I think it's deafening in a room, because it has such a big impact. And some people will say, you know, it was just easy to, you know, when I was hit, it was over. The mind games, the look that's, you know, you wait until what, you know, till you get home, or, you know, just that you shouldn't be doing that, or you shouldn't be looking at that person, the jealousness, the possessiveness, all can be in a look, which is just so powerful and just so destroying of that other person.
And most of the time it's the fear of something happening, isn't it? Which is what that look creates.
Wait until you get home, wait until you're in a space. Yeah, absolutely. And that's just a look. So coercive control, manipulation, isolation, you know, don't go and see your mom, you know, stay together. And so that cutting, you know, you don't want to talk to that friend because they're no good for you. They've got an opinion about everything. That sort of drip, drip, that you end up, people end up trying to lose any possible contradiction in what somebody's doing to them. And the only person's voice they will listen to is the person who's abusing them. Believe me, only me. Don't listen to her, don't listen to him, don't listen to your mom. And so isolation.
It's almost like an addiction to when they're nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
When they're nice, you're craving that. Well, they do love me. They are kind sometimes. When they are kind, they're very kind. Yeah. So you put up with the come down and the pain to get the high of the love.
Yeah, there's like a little journey that we talk about, which is called Hearts and Flowers. So what happens is, and you can see this situation and how it escalates. So there's the build up to a situation, and it could be, you know, as simple as my dinner wasn't on the table at a certain time. You had the heating too hot. Why were the windows all open? The kids weren't clean and dressed. You know, you were late. So this build up. Then you get to a point where there's this crescendo where the abuse happens. Then there's the regret and remorse. You know, you made me do that. I didn't really want to do that. Mm. And then there's the apology. So then it becomes the hearts and flowers. You know, we're really good together. You know, we're, if you hadn't done that, I wouldn't have done this and all that stuff. So then you go to hearts and flowers, and then it starts again, the build up. And what happens over time is that the person who's been abused doesn't know how soon that build up will happen. So life just becomes, you know, living on eggshells, because it's likely to escalate again. There's likely to be blame. There's likely to be an apology. You made me do that. That sort of frustration. You know, it's not me. There's the hearts and flowers. We've got a lovely family. Why would we want to destroy this? And it just keeps on going up and down and up and down. So, you know, somebody, the person who's been abused is like thinking, when is it going to happen next? And living like that. And if you're living like that, that affects your mental health. That affects how you manage the kids. If the kids being noisy or whatever, it just affects everything. So you're trying to control everything that's happening in your environment. You can't. You know, kids will run free. You should live, you know, in your own space, you know, not wound up in that way.
But when you think of domestic abuse, and someone said this to me, you think of domestic abuse, it's your partner, but it could be your parent or your child or your sibling. The people who you cohabit with, or the people you live with, could be ruining your life by them the word you said, like the emotional abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse. It hasn't always got to be your spouse.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The definition that the police use is way much wider than just, interpersonal partner abuse. And we have seen an increase over the last few years in the number of young people who are abusing their parents, you know, so teenagers, physically assaulting their parents. And of course, actually, that's an area that there are very few services around. You know, where does that young person go? And of course, you know, that young person still needs a roof over their head. The parent doesn't want to call the police on the child.
You find yourself enabling them to, because I can't turn my back on the baby,
even if
the babies are grown up. And
where do they go? Where do they get help? Who would you tell? So and as you say, parents to children, all different types of family relationships. Absolutely, abuse can happen anywhere. It's just, you know, where to get help. But you know, some people, like as I say, if your kid is abusing you, you do feel helpless. Where would you go? You don't want to see them out on the streets. They're doing really well at college, you know, you just hope that they keep on doing well. So why are they doing that to you? And you know, we know that there isn't enough help and support in schools, and we just started a new project which is supporting girls. Actually, we might move on to boys, but we know that there's a number of different services available to support young boys, as young girls are increasingly becoming violent, increasingly, you know, carrying knives, part of gangs, and you know, possibly on the edge of criminality. And so we know that the schools are sort of strapped for cash, and they've and what's the alternative? And we know that if you expel kids from schools, that the outcomes aren't good. So we thought, if we can get in, you know, and maybe support the young girls to sort of, you know, talk about healthy relationships, talk about why they're doing some of the things they're doing, talk about the risk of exploitation, talk about, you know, linking in with gangs and how to avoid it and where it could lead you, we might just stop things at an early stage. But that's really, really new. And the schools across the region have been really, really excited about, you know, someone else to support young people. And schools don't have enough of that, I don't think. So,
but sometimes we expect a lot from schools, and a lot of times schools are there to teach them our maths and English, that sometimes they don't do the best, but they're also expected to teach us manners and social graces and teach us. And it's hard to teach. Like, they go, well, it should be the parents to do it. But if the parents don't know better, you can only teach what you've been taught, haven't you? And sometimes I don't think there's enough in society about empathy. But if you say this to Sarah, how would that, you know, if you said this about her disabled child, how would that make you feel if you had a disabled child, or her mom has died, or her, you know, and explain it that way.
Yeah, and there's also so much on social media, isn't there, now? You know, so if you are, if there are things that are being said about you, it's not always to your face, is it?
No.
You know, it's quite a cowardice, isn't it, on social media?
Oh, it is.
So, you know, I think young people are getting a bit of a hard time at the moment. And I think the more we can wrap around help and support, the better they will be. Because there's so much that has gone, I think.
For me, I think we ought to teach them that it doesn't actually matter. There's very few people in your life that you should take stock of their opinion, whether that's good or bad, because most people don't know you and don't know you personally. So why if someone on some social media calls me and Kev something, it wouldn't bother me in the slightest, because that person doesn't know me. So why would I give him that?
Well, it's with grown up heads, isn't it?
It is, but if you start teaching that younger, to teach that actually those people, like, there's very few people in your life that you should be listening to.
It's funny, like, when children start going on, like, say, a Roblox or a WhatsApp or a, it's funny because you're going, oh, well, me and Sarah are in a group, and then Lee keeps trying to join on, and we keep saying no. To a child, you're thinking, oh, you know, it's our group. That child is, no one wants to be excluded, do they?
No, absolutely.
And something as soft and as pure as that, just, well, this is our group, you can't come in. You sat there, like, it's back when you're at school saying, can I play football? No. Yeah. And then, can I talk about football, you know? And it's that constant rejection. You're thinking, there's no escape from it in this world, is there?
Yeah, I agree. I
agree with what you're saying, but it's horrible, isn't it? Sorry.
It is horrible. And I think that I get people who say, you know, Sarah, you're really confident and all that stuff. Well, do you know what? I'm of a certain age. I don't want your views to know. But I wasn't when I was 13, 14 or 15, I wouldn't have said boo to a goose. I would have been affected by those sorts of criticisms, and I would have been affected by, you know, the sort of personal annihilations that young people get about how they're meant to look. I would have been affected by that. I didn't have that much confidence then. It would destroy it even further, and I wasn't even, you know, I didn't have that sort of pressure from social media or how to look or whatever. I was an average student in an average school trying to do my best. My family was loving, you know, we were an average family. We didn't have everything, we didn't, you know, but we weren't poor. And we were just, but it just, and I think, you know, being young now, we can't make a comparison to being young because they're young in a different era and surrounded by so much that's penetrating into their lives that's affecting their decisions and judgments. And they may not even have met that person.
I think that's right. I mean, I think our parents and us had a very similar childhood, whereas now my childhood compared to my kids, it's probably worlds apart.
And I think as a child, all you want to do is be normal, to exist. And that's why people do, like, sexual things or violent things. I remember I worked with a lot of kids, and I was like, if I couldn't understand something, I was trying to make me read something off the blackboard, and I couldn't see, I'd rather kick the table and get sent out for being naughty, to be sat and be humiliated. And I can see a lot of that now in society, and why people do sex pics or sexting, and but they don't realise once you've done it, it stays.
Yeah, and where it can go.
And where it can go. Yeah. And that can be, instead of, oh, I looked up the girl's skirt for a bag of Space Raiders or whatever, it's filmed, it's taken, and it's look at this, look at his willy, look at her boobies, look at the, and before you know it, that moment has spread.
Yeah.
And that can stay with you, even whether you've taken the photo, whether you've shared the photo or whether you're in the photo. And a lot of times they're doing grown-up actions, but they're still a child.
Absolutely.
And that can stay with them for the rest of their lives.
But, you know, you'll get people who say, send me a picture of yourself. Send me a picture. And it's sort of like the pressure to do that.
Yeah.
And then, you know that, it, you know, as you say, who it's shared with. But the pressure that person must be under to, you know, send a picture of a certain kind. I just think it's just tragic and sad.
If you don't love me, do it. And it, once again, it's that manipulation. It's that. But these are like the new world problems.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not that kind of like realisation of this ain't what it should be. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not even like in the older days, you get like a Polaroid and it could be burned. You know what I mean? Something like that. Well, no. There's the odd copy. It's gone. It's these things could be here forever and ever.
Yeah.
And I was like, the reason why, and I'm not criticizing, I've never put any pictures of my child on there because I'm of that generation when my brother used to live in Thailand, my best mate used to live in America. Never mate, I send him a WhatsApp. It's like a photo album. I show the people I want to see.
Absolutely.
Without putting it on there because you never know what creep could be looking at you. Anyone wants to do what they want about my ugly face, but not my baby, you know what I mean? And it's just something that I believe in because once again, I know once they're out there, it's out there forever.
I know, but I can't remember ever sitting my kid down in the same way that I sat down and taught them maths and read books to them. Did I ever sit down and show them how to use Facebook, how to use WhatsApp? They just get on and do it, don't they? And we don't always explain the consequences until that something has happened and then it's out there. You know, this whole world that has been opened up to young people, no training, no experience, no rule book, no nothing, but you've just got to be on it. And I remember a friend of mine, I know it's a game, but she resisted buying her kid an Xbox. I can imagine, and anybody listening, how can you deny, this is obviously about 10 years ago, how can you deny not buying your kid an Xbox? Everybody's got one. And she says, no, I'll buy it in through Christmas. I says, but he is missing out on so much. So there's wanting to be part of something and joining in with, you know, what everybody else has got because you don't want your kids to be isolated. But I just don't ever remember sitting with my kid, my oldest kid. I remember it was a BlackBerry, so that's quite a few years ago now. And he was bullied through it. And I never knew anything about that until, you know, the one day he was really upset and he showed me all these like awful messages that this one kid had been sending him. I knew nothing about that. You just think, you're sending the messages, why would you send an horrible one?
Yeah.
But we don't train our kids about that. We don't share anything. We just say, oh, social media is really bad. And it's interesting that one of the things that, you know, in a lot of the spaces that we're in that sort of says, oh, it's a real shame your services exist. Yes, it is. It's an acknowledgement that abuse exists. But what we need to do is we need to teach children about healthy relationships. Mm. Absolutely. Of course you do. But that takes time. It takes, you know, a whole generation. And it takes teaching the young people in an age-appropriate way.
Age-appropriate way.
You know, so what you're going into with a five-year-old about a healthy relationship, that would be friendships and things like that. And as you get a bit older, and we absolutely need to do that. We don't do enough of that in schools at all. That's what we need to be supporting young people about. So then we can bring in things about sexting, because that's not a healthy relationship. We can talk about, you know, messages that you might send to people, because that's not a healthy relationship. Be it a personal one or a friendship one. We don't know any of that. And that's what's really needed.
Well, my daughter, one of the things at school, primary school, Pantasaurus.
Oh, yes.
Pantasaurus. And I thought, it's a good word, Pantasaurus, a dinosaur with pants, but you don't show people your pants. You know, what's under your pants is for your mummy and daddy who's changing. You know what I mean? So it's safe people when you're getting dressed and all these kind of things. And that's an innocent way of showing you keep your privates covered. And I thought, that's a clever way. And then you build onto it. And it's, darling, you don't show your bits to people in school and you have modesty and it's explaining those things, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you don't let anyone put their hands on your bits and it's explaining. And I was thinking, I'm having these conversations a lot earlier than I thought it was because, as you just said, I'd rather have the conversation and approach the conversation before we're down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line, isn't it? And it's having the strength of character and the strength in relationship to realizing questions should never be off the table. And if they do want to discuss something with you, you're there to educate them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's children need a lot of safe people around them. And hopefully is their parents, but it doesn't have to be as well. Yeah. There's lots of different spaces that young people can interact. And I know that, you know, we try to create that safe space in Black Country Women's Aid, be it in one of our refuges or in our sort of community spaces, whether it's, you know, just, you know, the art rooms or things like that, that we're just encouraging people to just be themselves.
But you need to be that safe space.
Safe space,
The mom, the dad, could be the perpetrator, is there, you need someone, there's the welfare officer or someone to go, that's happened.
Yeah.
We're here to look after you or to help you to look after yourself.
And I'm glad that we've had, you know, parents who've been in our services and say, especially now we're doing so much more with young people, that will sort of say, would you have a word with my daughter? Because I think that this is what's happening to her and I don't know how to connect with her. Because if you haven't, you can't talk to them sometimes really as they get a bit older. And maybe they just need somebody else to tell them the wise words.
Yeah.
And so I'm really pleased that this mom has sort of said to one of our support workers, can you have a word with that? And you think, yeah, of course we can. Of course we can, because you don't want us to be exploited. You don't want us to join gangs. You don't want us to take drugs. You don't want us to send pictures of herself. You don't want any of that. So we're safe, and the mum sees that because we're safe for her too. So that's good. I feel that's you know, you're there for everybody who needs you, and I'm really pleased about that.
We're having the box of blood. Sometimes you don't want to listen to mum or dad.
Yeah.
So you go to your coach or your safe person as a chat, because sometimes you want to talk about mum. And sex,
yeah.
Or dad and drugs, because you're thinking, oh God, this is happening, but I don't want to go down here, so I'm not sure how you're going to deal with it. So you can have someone impartial and say, well, and that's what I love about this club. Love, we did three sessions. We're also doing moms and toddler lessons where they can come and train for free Thursdays and Fridays, 11:30 to 12:30. So if you've got any girls who want to come down,
okay, brilliant, thank you.
My mom and some other ladies will look after the kids. What the moms are training, and because it's moms and toddlers, if a kid is crying, people are more tolerant because their kids are here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a good way for moms to come and meet other moms. We're also doing a dad's peer support group, 12:30 to 1:30, Monday to Friday, where dads can come and train, but talk about being a dad. Because a lot of times we're still down the playground and we'll talk about boxing and football and drinking, but we don't talk about Eddie Babbitt's had a football night. Yeah. Or how we told her off and it broke our heart. So it's great for people who are living so close to you just to stop and go, you've been there, or me too. And that alone, you know, as you guys do, having a shared experience with someone can build the strongest bridges, can't it?
Yeah, just a space at all. Again, nobody taught us how to be a parent,
no.
You know, and if... And I would do things different to my mom, and she's a really good mom, but I do things different era. So just that space to talk, I think, is really important. I know my lad, my husband died when my oldest lad was 16, and missed. So as much as he, you know, will say, you've had to be mom and dad to me, he almost felt the need to take on a sort of, you know, more mature adult responsibility. Which meant that he needed to find someone to talk to. And we were really lucky that my husband had two very good friends that he would hang around with that, you know, has since then, so this is like, you know, 9 years on, has acted as a bit of guidance. They've seen him through his stupid phases, and believe me, he's been really stupid. And thank God he hasn't got a criminal record, he doesn't. But, you know, So I'm really pleased that he had another male, you know, strong males around him that could help and guide him. And he would always say to me, he says, you know, you've tried your best. Mm. And that's all you can do. But they need other people too. And he's certainly needed.
My oldest daughter had something similar with my youngest daughter's disability. We were in and out of hospital for the first few years. And she was struggling, but she didn't want to talk to me and mom. Because she could see that we were going through that and didn't want to
kind of
add problems. And she was doing this. She did this at a young age, but she's a worrier, my oldest. But they got someone in into primary school with her. He used to come in once a week, talk to her and do crafts and things like that, just things to take her mind off and then talk to her. And she still sees her now. Not in school anymore, but she's still a connection with her. And I just know she helped her through that period. And
yeah.
And brought along with her, fantastic lady, and yeah, really grateful for her.
I'm really grateful for these lads, and I mean, they're not lads, they're sort of, you know, late 50s, but I'm really grateful to them because they've sort of understood him growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't judge, you know, they don't judge him now in his 20s when he was 16. And believe me, he was an absolute idiot between the ages of 16 and 20. And he's had to mature and, you know, he's got a good, you know, good job. He works with people with quite severe mental health problems and he's brilliant at it. But they've never judged him. They've just always, you know, been there to offer that supportive hand. And I had to acknowledge that's something I can't do. So I need other people. And, you know, and I think as parents, you think you've got to try to do it all and you don't. It's not that I've let my kid down. I've just needed other people to help me because they can reach to him in a way that I can't. And my younger son, he has seen what I've experienced with the older one and sort of said, I'm never putting you through it. So he keeps himself to himself. So he said, no, you've got to express yourself. And he's not done anything as wild as the other one. But he says, no, you just I don't want to put you through that again. And you think, well, as parents, we're going to get put through whatever we get put through, aren't we? You know, life will throw us anything. It's just needing that sort of, you know, other people around. What do they say? It takes a community to raise a child. I love that saying.
You know that book I was telling you about the boy, where you just said, asking for help. And it's a lovely bit. And he goes, what's the hardest thing you ever said? You went, help. He goes, help wasn't giving up. It was refusing to give up. And I thought, I love that. And I say this saying all the time is, I've acknowledged I'm above my head. Help.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing to say, but by asking for that help, I've seen that I was about to give up and it's refusing to. And by accepting help, I'll move forward and get better. And I love that.
That's brilliant, that is.
It's so powerful. And it's one of my favourite sayings, and I say it all the time. And it's fantastic. And that's in life, whether you're going through abuse or you're a parent or whatever it is, it's not the coward's way out. It's the strong person's way out because you realise, I don't have help, I'm going to sink.
Yeah.
So it's having that, by asking help, it means I want to go on. I have a good friend downstairs in the boxing club. And he works with therapy in jail. And he often has these lads come and he goes like, God, oh, I don't want to be here, I can't be saved. And he goes, what have you done today? And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, tell me everything you've done today. He goes, well, I woke up, brush my teeth, I had to see the screw, I had to walk through and did it, and all these different things he's gone through, 30, 40 things. He's gone, so you've done all of them things to get here today, and there's nothing you can do to get better. Look what you've already achieved just by getting here in the first place. And sometimes even the smallest steps in life are so important. The world doesn't change by one big action.
Yeah.
It's 1,000 actions to create that one big thing. And often we don't give ourselves enough credit for the little steps, do we?
No. I think that's so well said that you know, big bang change doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't, and actually, does it ever happen at all? I think it is that sort of slow progress and talking through. And you're never going to get, you know, certainly with people that we meet, you're never going to get the whole life story in one conversation. And people will, you know, pick and choose what they're going to tell you, because, you know, people will look at us and say, how much can I trust to tell you? And then you have to build trust, you have to build the confidence, you have to make sure the place is that they're coming in to talk, that they want to come back and tell you something else. Because then when it's all out, you know, there's nothing more to tell, and then things can be rebuilt. So it is slowly, and, you know, baby steps. And and that's hard work, because it's very easy to sort of go back and say, I'm going to stop telling you, because actually I don't want you to hear anything else. And we all, you know, we're very open and sort of come back anytime. Come back when you're ready.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you're ready, we're ready and we're here. And, you know, baby steps, and people will start, stop. That's okay as well.
And it's okay to fail. It's okay to relapse. It's okay to, but it's, we're human beings, you know, it's okay to fail. And I say this a lot, because I say the only thing that's easy in life is by giving up. And I say this to my boxers, I mean, that it's easy to give up at the time. But when you've got to go back and look yourself in the mirror, that's not easy, because you knew you didn't, you give up. But by asking for help to stop yourself from giving up, that takes courage, that takes strength, that allows you to carry on. It's okay to fail, because if I failed, at least I had the bottle to have a go in the first time. But it's when people don't, because they might fail. So I live a life in what ifs. And if this is as bad as it gets, want to try something else? That might be terrible. But I already know this is terrible. So that might not be as bad or even better. It might be bloody good.
Yeah, and I think the difficulty is some people are afraid of what could be. So you in front of you, you know what, you know, certainly in abusive relationships, you know how it is. You know how the behaviour is. You know what's, you know what's going to come. You know, you don't want to upset the apple cart. I'm afraid of an alternative, maybe being on my own. Maybe, you know, I've lost all my friends. I have to reestablish my relationship with my family. That's hard work because then I have to go over. Maybe they all knew this wasn't good. So you stay in what you think is safe. But actually, this isn't safe because this is really toxic, isn't it? So fear of the unknown, that sort of brave step that people will make, whether it's an abusive situation or just needing to change, is that's a really big step to sort of say, I'm going to stop doing this because this is not good for me, and to go on to something else. But you actually don't know what the something else is, because you don't know how it's going to pan out. You don't know who's going to be involved. You don't know whether you're going to like it, as you say. And you might want to retreat back to what you know best. But actually, that's not good for you.
But you see, having people of like-minded or same experience or similar experiences and going, I was there, or I was there similar,
yeah,
and I overcame it. It's going to be uncomfortable, but life is full of uncomfort. But if you persevere, it can get better.
Yeah.
And that's the lived experience. And it's having those people who've walked the same track can give reassurance. It's not watching an after school special. It's not watching a, you know, a sitcom. It's going, I've been here. I've got the scars. I've got the warts. I've got the, but I got through it. And I love them kind of stories, because you're looking at someone thinking, you get me. You know what I mean? My pain was different to your pain, but pain is pain. And you know, when you've got them people, you think, okay, where do we go from here? Sometimes, like when you've got, like, you're doing the house up and there's just a mountain of rubbish, you're looking at it and go, where the bloody hell do we start? But if you, someone, just go, we take the cans out first. And once all the cans are out, then we take the paper. Then if you've got someone just to go, yeah, now it's in order, I know where to start. But sometimes it's just knowing where to start, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's okay, having somebody else to help you to do that. It's okay. And just doing, even if you just did the cans, it's going to make a difference, isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah. We got this. We had this woman who came into our service, and she said something which I just loved. She said that when you called, it wasn't always to talk about what was going on in life. You just called to say, how are you? When you called, unlike other people, social workers, or, and I'm not disrespecting any profession, you didn't come with an official hat on. You saw me. And when you called, there was no judgment. If I wasn't in a good mood to talk to you, you didn't judge me. You were just going to call again. So she said it was like you were just like a comfort blanket, because all the calls were just always I genuinely felt that you were genuinely interested in me. And she said, and I threw you a whole load of, you know, attitude to begin with, but you never stopped making the call to see how I was. So this, with this comfort blanket, you know, she just knew she could come back. And in what, you know, whatever day, whatever mood she was in, we were still with the same welcomer, cup of tea. We always have loads of tea, and an open door. And I really like that, you know, the comfort blanket. And that's what we probably all need, isn't it? A bit of a comfort blanket.
We all need that, don't we? Sometimes when you're feeling poorly, a bit sad.
Yeah.
That bit of, and back in the day, it was always like, pop around, I'll put a brew on. But we've become more of a digital era. And it's, for the older generations, that human contact is remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you can beat it. I don't think, you know, COVID did something about, you know, making things online and talking to people on the phone more, and people not coming out. And I think that, you know, it's increased people's anxiety to go out. So I know of, you know, friends, kids who the anxiety. I don't remember them ever being anxious before COVID, you know, young, confident people, you know, people who won't come in to have face-to-face because maybe it is a bit more convenient on the phone. But actually, you can you get a sense of who that person is in that space. You can, you know, read body language. We can show warmth. Yeah. You don't get all those little soft emotions and sort of, you know, I don't know how we portray care. Of course we care on the phone, because you can talk nicely and all that, but it's not the same as being kind in a space where you're together and being hospitable, making a cup of tea, or, you know, sharing something, or somebody saying, you know, we're short of baby clothes, and we can say, oh God, we've got loads in the cupboard, we've got loads of kind donations. And you've done that tonight. You've given me loads of fabulous donations from the Boxing Club, which is incredible. We can go to a cupboard, we can reach out, and we can give people things, you know, it's not about words, it's about other things, just to make life better. And that's what you can do by connecting with another person. Can't do it on the phone.
Well, that's what I mean. In the 5 years, we've been having you guys on. And it's been lovely because you're growing, we've been growing, we're getting bigger audience. That's why I always get you girls and guys on. And it's the work doesn't end, does it?
Sadly, no. And certainly one of the things that we set up, because we ran a service, and it was for victims of sexual abuse, and we had quite a lot of men that came through that service, and we have had some amazing men who said, Sarah, if you want us to tell anybody about the help and support you've provided, we'll go on any show, anything.
Funny enough, my sister's just messaging about that, because her ex-husband contacted you. He's been on the show, so I don't mind talking about it. And he contacted you for sexual abuse, and you helped him. Andy Plant.
Oh, that's fabulous.
That's how we found out.
That's how we found out about it, yeah, funny enough, through that conversation.
And rightly so, people would say, what about the men? And, you know, I can't deny it happens predominantly to women. But in the years we've been doing Ask Mark, we've grown every year in the number of people, number of men being confident to call and to have those conversations and to talk about their abuse. And it's been absolutely brilliant to have a male service. And we're sort of hoping to expand that across the whole of the West Midlands. But, you know, so year on year, as you've been growing, and you certainly gave us this platform to connect with men who listen to the show, all partners who know that their partner is struggling with something that happened in their past, that they've felt confident to call us. We've got brilliant advocates, very kind men. The lads that run that, there's it is males, but and if somebody preferred to speak to a female, we've got experienced workers all over the place, so people have choice. You know, men have choices to who they want to speak to. So that has just grown beyond belief, really, in the time that you've supported us. And certainly, you know, the radio has really helped and connecting with people in the Black Country. And I'm glad, you know, we've been able to help. It just shows it's sort of real, doesn't it? Because, you know, when you can say, a member of my family has, and it's not behind closed doors, and I hope we helped your family, your sister's husband, and it's had a positive impact upon their relationship.
Unfortunately, it's ex-husband. But we still speak to him, and he's doing fantastic now. Yeah. It's not, yeah. So we.
Oh, sorry.
And we've had it on here before.
Yeah.
Downstairs when I'm doing my groups, and Kev can have a word. Can we go out for a fag? And you have a chat to someone, and they say, look, first person I told, but 20, 30 years ago, I was sexually abused. Mm-hmm. And they're talking, this, well, where do you want to go from here? And it's, well, I'm not really, that's fine. We sit on it then. And then some people will be, well, do you know anyone? And then I'll pass over the numbers. And that's why it's been great doing.
Yeah. I mean, previous to kind of hearing, because when Andy mentioned it on the show, it was like Black Country Women's Aid. What do you mean? And AskMart wasn't out then. Pre AskMart. No. And that threw us off.
I know.
Women's Aid. It's kind of unfortunate, the name, but you don't know where life's going to take you. But yeah, and it's we didn't know anything about it previous to that, and it's the only one I'm aware of around here as well, isn't it? That kind of helped male with sexual abuse as well.
Yeah, there's some like Fathers for Justice and things like that exist, but we we will support any form of personal abuse, rape, sexual violence, domestic abuse, stalking, exploitation.
Slavery,
yeah. We'll support any. And actually, within our modern slavery support service, it's often tipped 50-50 in that group of people that we support is 50% of men. And we've got a lot of male support workers there, and they work across the whole of the West Midlands supporting victims of modern slavery. So I'm glad.
That's shocking, though, isn't it? How we think of, was it slavery finished in 16 or 1866? And you're thinking it's on every corner around everywhere, isn't it?
It's
so in your face, but under the radar, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And I think that, you know, there's trying to be messages to sort of everybody to be vigilant about it and to sort of, you know, look at, you know, how we're paying for things. Is it just all cash? Maybe the people who's delivering services. There was a big campaign about sort of car washes and nail bars and hairdressers and barbers and all those restaurants and stuff like that, that, you know, there's a labour that can go under the radar that you wouldn't necessarily see. And certainly we've seen, you know, lots of, you know, the West Midlands is a very international space, isn't it? So you can't go around labelling, you know, people, you know, particular communities exploiting. But we just need to be vigilant, you know, and people need to sort of see if you've got a lot of people living in a house next door to you that's coming and going, you know, that might be something of concern, and call the council and they can investigate all of that. So you don't want to put anybody in any danger, because sometimes it could be part of bigger criminal gangs and things like that. You don't want to do that. But, you know, you've got to be able to feel if something isn't right, it probably isn't, and know where to call or who to contact.
So it's just a bit of a voice, isn't it, as well? Going, I think something's here. What do you recommend doing?
Yeah. I mean, most of the local authorities, they've got a sort of person that has the responsibility for modern slavery. Call the police, of course. You know, it wouldn't be something that a victim, we're part of a national network that would support victims, but it's not an open door through Black Country Women's Aid. And interestingly, we say about, you know, male victims coming into Black Country Women's Aid, we used to say, is that a problem? Does that cause a problem for you? You're coming into Black Country Women's Aid, and they sort of says, I never thought anything of it. So it only mattered in publicity. Those that came into the service that got the help and support they needed. And we go to court with people who want, even on historical abuse, if they wanted to, you know, report it to the police and investigation. We've had some really good successes at court where, you know, 40 years down the line, they've convicted the abuser, because actually that person is probably not the only person they've abused. So we've had some amazing successes. And I mean, court's a brutal space, but the bravery of people, you know, and we were there with them throughout the whole of the journey. But we did think we needed to find a sort of more appropriate name.
I don't think it's the inappropriateness of it. I think men wouldn't think it help, so they wouldn't come forward.
Yeah.
It kind of puts that barrier there that shouldn't be there.
I think what we've tried to do in Black Country Women's Aid, in that, unlike some of the big cities, the Black Country hasn't always had a sort of range of services for victims of abuse. And so you could wait for somebody else to do it, or you could say, somebody called us up for help. And if we were not able to help them, why were we not able to help them? And was there someone else that we could signpost them to? And in some cases, there wasn't anybody. So you think, well, I've got all the skills and expertise around me. I know how to run these services. I know good people who are support workers and counsellors. Why not us? Yeah. So that's how we sort of built up. We had people who came to us and they were victims of stalking. Well, where would they go? So we developed a stalking service, the only one. In fact, when we set up the stalking service, nationally, there were only eight specialist stalking service in England. So now the region has a specialist stalking service, and that service has worked with the police and other agencies. And I'm convinced we've stopped some murders because of the traits and behaviours that we have understood from a psychological perspective and sort of informed the police. Because again, you know, stalkers, some of their behaviours, especially if you're an ex-partner, rejected stalkers, they call them, you know, you'd sort of say, well, what's... what's the problem with this? You know, why would you think this is an offence? This, you know, just some of the words that might be said in text messages or a rose left on a mat or something like that. But it's quite menacing because it's, you know, why would they do that? So I'm dead proud of you know, the stalking service that didn't exist. And as I say, we used to say, if not, why not? Why can't, who else would do it if we didn't? And that confidence in being able to sort of think we can do it, and then the confidence in people calling us. You know, so somebody called us at that time, we couldn't help. So you think, well, we will help. We will do something. And we're always going to be like that, always.
What's that saying? I can't change the world, but I can change that person's world. And that's lovely way of seeing it, isn't it? I can't save everyone, but that person I can save them.
Yeah. We can do our bit. We can work with that person. We can work out where they want to be and help them get there. We can't get there for them because you can't do things. We can't change people's mindsets. You have to work with people to work through how they think, how they believe in themselves, what their confidence is, and we can work to improve and increase all those things. But, yeah, if not, why not? Why can't we do it? We can. And we've got fabulous supporters. You know, yourselves, this platform is fantastic, reaching a whole load of people that I may never have engaged with through my leaflet campaign or putting something up in a poster or in the toilet doors or whatever. I may never have reached the people who listen to this, which is incredible.
And even if they don't live in the Black Country, we have a lot of listeners from abroad. But if you are listening abroad, wherever you're listening in the world, if you are going for any of the subjects we have touched on today, there is help out there. And isn't that no matter where, if you're in Timbuktu, try and find somewhere to get help because you haven't got to live in sorrow. You know, there is possibilities and you too can have happiness. And that's all we want to get from this. We want to show people you're not alone. These things happen in every community in the world. They happen everywhere, and that's what I've learned from talking to so many different people. Everything happens to everyone. Abuse, cancer, mental health, affairs, theft. So don't be ashamed that it's happening in your culture. Don't be ashamed because it happens everywhere, but it doesn't make it right. So go and get help from somewhere, wherever that help may be. Before we go, you did a Woman of the Year. Do you want to just talk about that?
Yeah, we started this last year, and but this year we sort of went bigger and better, and we did this, you know, publicity around the Black Country to sort of say, nominate somebody in your community who has inspired you, a woman who's made a difference. And we tied it up with the International Women's Day events that we had, and we had this lovely ball and everybody dressed in fancy frocks and all that sort of thing, and I look very glamorous. So we had over 50 nominations from the community.
I'll put a nomination in.
I can't acknowledge that you did, but I know you did, yes. and you know, they were all worthy winners. They really were. Women who, in their communities, were doing things above and beyond. Never asked to do, you know, nobody ever asked them to. They just got on and did it. So Kerry was the winner. And she, I remember, we've got a video of it, and she's like looking at the runner-up. We had a runner-up, which was Katie Newell, who does so happen to work for Black Country Women's Aid, and she's a fantastic woman. And so we've got
lovely woman, Katie.
She is Katie Newell. She's fantastic. Anybody who meets her, I feel that she lights up a room. Yeah, I really do. And we've got this filming, and it's on Kerry, who's clapping, saying, "Oh, well done, well done." And Kerry, we knew, but she'd done some photography with us.
Yeah,
she has a hearing impairment. And we see her clapping and say, "Well done, she's the winner." And then when we announce she's the winner, you just see this woman just say, "Oh my gosh, it's like nothing has ever happened like this." And when we shared with everybody the incredible efforts that she makes to connect children with hearing impairments, she does some sort of martial arts.
Mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
I'd love to get her on the show.
Oh, she's a wonderful woman. Absolutely wonderful. Just so surprised and just so understated. And that's what I think any one of our nominations could have been women that were there could have been the winner. There was something very special about how she connected as broad and wide as possible. You know, there was no bus trip that was too much trouble to reach a child who needed her help. You know, that sort of including children who maybe their families didn't see how they could be. And so that encouragement. And she was just lovely. Really, really fantastic night. So we're going to run them every year. Around International Women's Day, we'll do that. We had sponsorship from Higgs Solicitors. We had sponsorship from a building company, an IT company. You know, we raised over £1,000 that is going to sort of new refuges that we're currently building. You know, we had people who donated the kitchen or tiles for the bathrooms and things like that. So that was our fundraiser, and it continues to be, because we're unfortunately not able to help everybody who needs refuge space. So Kerry, you know, is a fabulous ambassador of Black Country Musée. So she, like Miss Universe, we'll hold this title for a whole year. We'll hand it over to the next person next year. And you know, I want to make it a thing, because we need to celebrate Black Country women. Tomorrow we've got the wonderful poet Liz Berry coming to see us. If you've heard of her, she's incredible. Black Country woman, born and bred, the most amazing poet. So she's coming. She's been given a doctorate from Wolverhampton University. If you look out for her poetry, proper Black Country girl that connects with the hearts of everybody who lives here. It's a wonderful woman.
Once again, if she ever wants to come on, pass our details on.
I will. I will.
And it's great, you know, to give good people a shout out, isn't it? And that's what I'm all about. That's what we're all about, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Sarah, thank you ever so much for coming. Oh, have you got any other events coming up?
Yes. So we've got, look out for Glitz and Glam. That's going to be a sort of summer party. So Glitz and Glam. I'll expect you in Glitz and Glam. And not 1970s Glitz and Glam. And then we shall, we'll have various events throughout the summer for our families. You know, we do seaside trips and trips to the zoos and all that sort of thing. So we do fundraisers for that. We've got the fire walk in October. So anybody's interested in walking on fire, that's a really amazing experience.
I did it the other year.
Yeah.
And it's great, you know, great experience being there and combating your own fears and what for a better charity.
Yeah. And we're hoping to do a curry and quiz night round about September, as that is. So what did I say? Glamour and Glitz June, curry night September, firewalk November, then Christmas campaign. So I want as many people from the Black Country to be involved in what we do. Walk on coals, you know, for yourself, because it's just such an inspiration thing to do. People have said it changed their lives, which was fantastic. And who doesn't need a good old dance?
I know, say, guys, like out here, because we're always collecting at Lions ABC. We're always collecting for different charities. And the charity shops are great. You know, we all take it. And we all think we're doing a great job. But I'd much rather give it to a charity that the shoes are going to go on dad's feet, the handbag's going to go on mom, the dolly is going to go to the little girl. I'd rather go to a family than sit in a shop. So if you are donating, you can always bring it to me and I'll find someone to give it to. Or they can contact yourselves, can't they, Sarah?
Yeah,
what's
of course
the best
they can.
Thing they can do?
Absolutely.
On Facebook, is it, or on?
They can contact us. Our email address is on our website. We do have a Facebook page, yeah, so you can see how all the sort of fundraising and people who sponsor and support us on there. So, yeah, we can contact us through there. Yeah, the lovely Katie Newell, we've got a fundraising team that will go out and meet people. Yeah, absolutely.
So give it to people. That's what I'm trying to say. There's so many people out there that just appreciate it. And as Sarah said, look, sometimes just sitting in our cupboards, thinking, well, get rid of it and give it to a good home. And that's what we try and do a lot with the toys and the clothes, and just thinking, give it to a family that'll really appreciate it. And especially in refuge. And I always think that, you know, when you're on holiday and you go, oh, I forgot my phone charger. Imagine leaving your house without anything. So all these little things can make a big difference to people who need it the most. The next week, we've got my boxer, Osman Mohammed, who boxes for England and is on the early intervention, early emerging talent of GB. He's been coming here, turning about. He's, I think this year he's been to 7 countries and doing really well with his boxing. We'll talk about, unfortunately, what happened to him in the championships, having that knock, that little cut to his head to sabotage his GB dreams for this year. Well, there's still life in the old dog yet. But he's going to be coming on here, talking positive about amateur boxing. Sarah, before you go, have you any quotes or sayings that have helped you get through life?
Be the best you can be at all times.
Well, guys, until we see each other next time, I want you all to take care of yourselves and each other. Draw a bit.
Listen.
And that's a wrap for another show. But if there are any comments or messages that you'd like us to read out for our next podcast, please be in touch. There are also lots of different organisations at the bottom of this page, and hopefully they can help you or someone you care about. Please share this to spread the word. Until we talk next time, ta-ra a bit.
Listen.